Get closer to Irish rugby with News Talk and Vodafone, official sponsor of the Irish rugby team.
And we're joined in studio, as always now, I guess, on a Monday night by Eddie O'Sullivan and by Gavin Comiskey. Evening, gentlemen.
Good evening. How are you?
Probably timely in a way that I spotted yourself and Brian Kerr talking outside, considering Vincent Hogan's piece in the Irish Independent today. And Gavin, you're probably better placed to talk about this. It is a bloody disgrace that neither Eddie O'Sullivan or Brian Kerr are involved in Irish sport at the moment.
Even in some shape or form, yeah. With all the young kids and all the talent that's coming through, it'll be something like, obviously Brian built his whole reputation around that, but yeah, makes no sense.
Yeah, you would have been on the circuit at the same time?
Yeah, I met Brian a few times when he was an Irish manager, had a couple of coaching conferences and stuff where you'd bump into him at different events, you know, always have a good old chin wag, but those days are long gone.
Yeah. Vincent Hogan today was writing about he's writing about the Irish Scotland rivalry, but also talking about the way it changed when you took charge of Ireland, and also talking about a previous time you were here on Off the Ball, about the Connacht job, and talking about who was going to get it, and maybe Nigel Carlin was the man. He has ruled himself out definitely from that position, and at the time you basically said that I've never given up on Irish rugby, maybe it's given up on me. In the intervening weeks, has anything changed surrounding the Connacht job?
No, not that I'm aware of. I haven't heard anything on others. And I think, you know, the general vibe coming with the Connacht is they're looking around the world, looking outside Ireland. I think that some people have ruled themselves out already outside of Ireland. I think Tony Brown, who's at the Highlanders, I don't know.
And he's locked into Japan for the World Cup.
Yeah, he's going to Japan with Jamie Joseph. He ruled himself out. And the latest name was John McKee, who has a background in Connacht. He was involved. And Colin, I know John, I met him a couple of times. He was with Tonga, he was at Fiji. I met him in the World Cup in 2011 with Tonga. Good man, yeah. His wife's from Ballina, so he's got a tie. But yeah. Other than that, it seems to be that they're looking outside, I suppose, at the moment.
Yeah, because the words that were used were ambitious, attractive style of rugby, winning rugby, and at the same time, you know, hopefully they can get somebody Irish. And as Vincent points out, they could well be talking about somebody like Eddie O'Sullivan.
Obviously, Eddie's got the experience, no question. Nigel Carlin, though, would have been a bit of a leap for him. Like he's got a nice little track there. He's in on the Irish 20s. He's come from the Connacht Academy. To drop him into this job, this is, I think he was smart. Like there's a pathway for him that takes a long time for him to come in as an assistant coach with Connacht might make some sense or something like that. But the head coaching job, again, as Eddie said, they're going abroad, I think, is what it looks like. Yeah. You know, Tony Brown has come up in the last few times. There's been a chance for an Ireland job. And it looks like Japan, he's going to be Japan's attack coach.
He was floated for Leinster at one point as well.
Yeah, it looked like it was a real thing. And it sounded like he was sounded out and just said no, as far as after Matt O'Connor.
Yeah.
He is considered one of the smartest young coaching minds in New Zealand. And he's going to be making a lot of money in Japan over the next couple of years.
In terms of the final decision, how does it weigh up between Connacht and the IRFU? Who has the final say?
The IRFU.
When do you expect the decision?
I don't know. They're going to have to do it soon. I'd say they're right down the tracks by now, I'd imagine, because they have to have this. The coach, like Arasi Erasmus, was able to prepare from April. You have to be able to prepare not just before pre-season. You can't just prepare when everyone goes on holidays. They need to get in and get a grip and get to see what's happening in Connacht for the last month or two of the season. There has to be a process.
Like Eric staff as well, like the support staff.
Everything, yeah.
Who's staying, who's going.
Yeah, you need to get to know the guys.
Is there new support staff coming in? There's all sorts of logistics, to be fair, to give the coach a chance to get a run into it, you know.
Eric Elwood did that with Pat Lamb, actually. He had him in for the last month of the season, so.
We've got sidetracked slightly from what we were going to be talking about, which was the Six Nations.
Much more important.
Indeed.
Six Nations starting Saturday, Ireland against Scotland. And touching on that piece from earlier, you said ahead of the win in 2002 about the speech beforehand, talking to the Irish players, you challenged the players to name a single Scottish player that Ireland should logically fear. When you look at this current Scottish side, if Joe Smith was to ask the same question, how many players in that Scotland side should Ireland fear?
I don't think we should fear Scotland. I mean, I'm not trying to beat Scotland up or play them down, but like we went for a long, long time back in the 90s where we couldn't beat Scotland under any circumstances. And it wasn't that they were so much better than us, just had the hex over us. And sometimes we'd lose games that we were agonising close to winning, and there's other games that just beat us out the gate. And I mean, I was involved back in 2001 in the famous
Fortnite.
Assistant coach at the time, it was the delayed Six Nations, the foot and mouth Six Nations. Yeah. I remember sitting in the stand And it was 20 minutes in, John Hayes had gone off with a very bad gash and his head wasn't coming back. And I was thinking, God, we put up another 60 minutes of this thrashing because we were never going to win. Like, we were never even close. And it was you know, every 2 years we used to get whacked up there in some way, shape or form. And there was no logic to it. And I remember we'd beaten them in 2002, and 2003 was our first trip up there. And I was saying, this is a watershed moment for us. If we come to Murrayfield and get beaten out the gate again, like, what are we going to say to ourselves? And I really challenged the guys coming up to that game. I remember we went a day early and we stayed in the Balmoral, which we always do. There was nothing new in that. But instead of kind of holding up in our rooms, we sent guys out to walk the town. And, you know, it's a great city. Yeah. It's a great rugby atmosphere. I remember we, ironically, the pitches were frozen. We had to train in the gyms and stuff. But it was a Sunday game and we had the extra day there. And I remember challenging them because the last time I think Ireland had won there, I think Fergus Slattery was in the back row, like, which was a frightening thought. And I couldn't see if we played up to scratch, if we got our head out of the space that we couldn't win at Murrayfield, that we couldn't beat them. And we played very well and we won the game. I think for us, it was in that stage of our development, it was a watershed moment.
Yeah, that decision to go a day early and to allow the players out and about in Edinburgh, was that born from being there as an assistant coach? Did you get a sense when you were going to Scotland that the players were nervous earlier in the week, that there was this hanging
there,
over them?
I've been there many times. I've been there way back in the 90s when they were at the peak of their powers. I was the fitness coach for the Irish team under Kieran Fitzgerald. I remember we had a World Cup game there that we lost. It was very controversial. Jim Staples got taken out under a high ball. He was concussed.
But
that time we couldn't buy a win up there. And there was an intimidatory factor. Now, that was a very good Scottish side back then. And then they got to, I think, close to World Cup semi-final. But after that, it was the same kind of mental attitude going in there. And I'd been at games there as a spectator. And you got the same sense going in there. It was like, you know, you were in for a bad day out if you didn't get in front of it. And even then, so it was a mental block, really. There was no obvious reason for it. And at some point you had to address it and say, look, we've got to get this monkey off our back.
Yeah.
It's gone now, though.
Definitely
from
gone.
From Eddie's time as coach to now, people go to Murrayfield going, we're going to win. There was the game where Paddy Jackson was put in too soon.
Rowan O'Gara had that crossfield kick in the closing minutes.
Yeah, there was disaster.
We lost twice in 15 years there. Yeah. To Scotland, one away and one at home.
But this is the best Scottish team now in recent times.
A decent team.
There's a bit of a buzz about them.
They're better than us.
Yeah, they got the Glasgow team. And then you can look, they got Richie Gray from Toulouse, John Barkley from Scarlets, Laidlaw running the show at 9. My favourite player that they have, and if you watch November matches when they really should have beaten Australia, it was just bad defence at the end. They have this guy called Hugh Jones, who actually went on a gap year to Cape Town. He's Scottish via schooling in England with Jonathan Joseph in his class or whatever, and he got found, and all of a sudden he's playing Super Rugby for the Stormers. He was superb in November now at outside centre. He was their best player. He literally set up the try O'Driscoll style, where he broke a tackle and got his arms free for them to beat Argentina. He's 23. They've come up with this absolute gem of a player. If he's playing, like, he'll really test Ringrose and Henshaw on the weekend.
Yeah, Vern Cotter's leaving at the end of the Six Nations. Is that going to have any effect on this Scottish team? Because they do seem to be on this upward trajectory where they're poised for a big Six Nations.
I don't think it's going to affect them. Of course, Cotter's leaving, and you're right. There's always a sense that maybe they take their eye off the ball a bit because there's a new guy coming in and the old guy's even. To be fair, I think Scotland realise they have a good vintage at the moment if they can hang on to it and keep the form. So I don't see them taking their foot off the pedal for any reason whatsoever. Having said that, I mean, they are a good Scottish team, but if you look at the matchups, I still think we have the beatings of them. Now, will we win? We should. Could we lose? We could. But I think we'd have to play below par and they'd have to play right up there to beat us. I think for that reason, if we play to par, and I don't see us dropping. I think, in fairness to Joe Schmidt, he's got that kind of grip on the team where they know it's about delivering consistency all the time. So I don't see fellas dropping off. It's not allowable in this professional era. Mm. And I don't think we'll fall off. And I'd be surprised if we... It'll be a bit of a dogfight, but I think we'll come out the right side of it in the end.
Yeah, when Cotter is focusing on the matchups and has been for the last week and this week as well, what are the areas then of the Irish team that he may see, maybe not so much a weakness in the Irish team, but an area that Scotland are certainly stronger?
Well, last year they'll take great stock out of the try that they got from the counter-attack from Stuart Hogg, where Ireland used a very kind of bizarre exit strategy of kicking long when we had three front rows of defending the midfield and Hogg just ripped them apart. Like, they'll be hoping for that sort of gift again, but I can't imagine they'll get it. I think they'll certainly, at the moment, I looked at the way they're playing over the last while. It's not spectacular. It's very solid. It's very tight. It's kind of keeps, you know, risks to a minimum, mistakes to a minimum. So they have that tendency to stay with you.
Yeah.
And at home, that's a big factor. But I don't see anything sticking out that we say, oh, this is going to cause us a major problem. No, we had a really good start to the summer on Andy Farrell on defence, but the autumn we got a bit leaky again on tries. You know, we had 10 tries. No, it was New Zealand and Australia, but even Canada got 3 tries against us. And let's be honest, you know, had Australia held on to a couple of passes that didn't stick, that was that game gone away, and maybe, you know, looking at 12 tries in 3 matches. So I think there's a little question mark there, and Scotland might take some hope out of that because their continuity is very good. Like us, their ball retention is in the 90 percentile, so they don't give the ball away that much. They'll hold on to it, and if we get sloppy on defence, if we get compressed like we can do at times and leave space on the outside corners, we could get caught a little bit.
But I think we can plan for the same way we planned against Southern Hemisphere teams, because they do look to offload, and for starters, Hogg is not scoring a try like that again. That has to be, that's line in the sand stuff, I'd
sure,
imagine, in Carlton House.
You couldn't imagine,
but he's capable of it, of course. But I'd
well,
say
he needs just a one mismatch and he's off.
Yeah.
The guy is electric, and if he gets the right matchup, he'll skin somebody. But I thought that try was of our construction rather than theirs.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Which was surprising.
It was
very
clear from his side as 22, so, and it went probably too long as well.
Yeah, it wasn't contestable, but the way we set up, we came from left to right off a set piece. We loaded up the rocks with backs, left the front row to do the kick chase, which was like manna from heaven for someone that fast.
It looked more spectacular than it probably was, yeah.
I was a little bit surprised reading the Six Nations previews in all the weekend papers, just how positive everybody seemed to be about Ireland's chances of winning the championship. I think every pundit in
all
the Sunday
English,
window,
all the English tipped Ireland, so I think we should be careful.
And nearly all the Irish tipped the Irish as well.
Because It's the odd year, so we've got England and France at home. Like, for us to win a Grand Slam or a Six Nations in the even years, you've got to win in Paris and London, which is difficult.
Yeah.
So you've got the two tough teams at home. Although France are no longer the tough team. Like, France have fell off the radar here. France have not finished above fourth for 5 seasons. I mean, their record in the last 5 years.
Is that performance against the All Blacks enough to keep even convince
you?
No,
we've seen
this
before in the autumn. They put out a big one. But when it comes to Six Nations, in 2013, they got whitewashed. Like, this, France are off the radar here. There's 3 teams at the moment. There's a 2-tier tournament. Like, let's be honest. Historically, are Scotland, Italy going to win the championship? I don't think so. They might upset a few feathers along the way.
Mm.
France have now fallen off the radar. Unless something cataclysmic changes, I don't see it. It's between Ireland, England and Wales, and a pivotal game for Ireland, because I think we'll beat Scotland, we'll beat Italy, we'll beat France in Dublin, we'll be Friday night in Cardiff. If we beat Wales in Cardiff on a Friday night, I think Joe Schmidt will fancy his chances in Dublin a week later against England. And England, maybe that's if any more injuries, could be very vulnerable. So it's stacked up rightly for us. Now, that's a lot of things fall into place, but you could have a worse draw than that.
Yeah, it's also, a lot of it is dependent on, granted we know Paddy Jackson and Jos van der Flyer and Peter O'Mahony have all come in and performed well in when Sean O'Brien and Johnny Sexton are injured, but for a Grand Slam, those two men need to be on the pitch on March 18th against England.
There's Sean no O'Brien, doubt the halfback is area is,
yeah. If Murray goes down, like,
if we lose Murray,
it, you know, as
or
far
Sexton,
as winning
and be, it could be a big problem for us, because to be fair, that's really very important to keep the glue of the team going, you know.
Yeah, but the emergence, and well, not so much the emergence, but what Paddy Jackson did in South Africa, does that change the way you look at this Six Nations compared to 12 months ago and the importance of
Johnny
Sexton?
He's matured, he's better placed, he's more confident.
What he's done this season as opposed to South Africa, he was very good in the test that they won, but he made some bad decisions in the one that they lost.
But
he
would have learned from it.
This season he's been good. Like, you know.
But then the downside of that is he's coming out of an Ulster setup that's not firing on all cylinders. It's been like, there has to be some little bit of doubt in his mind that Ulster are not really firing like Munster and Leinster, you know?
Yeah,
and
maybe
Connacht.
Play him in Rome. Maybe there should be an idea of not letting Sexton have to play the 5 games. Because when has he played 5 games? When has he played 70 minutes, 60 minutes, 70 minutes for 5 games over 6-7 weeks? I can tell you, he hasn't done it for over a year.
No, he's been very injury prone. That's
so,
the problem. You know?
Maybe there has to be a look at Paddy Jackson. You can trust him. If you're going to trust him somewhere, you trust him in Rome.
Yeah.
And Carberry, well, probably won't be back by then. So maybe it's Sexton on the bench. And then you let him go at it against the French.
The word today from Carlton House was that Sexton should train tomorrow. He should be back on the training pitch after his calf injury. But do coaches think like that?
Well,
do they think, like,
they
can
do,
they think that far ahead?
It's
of,
a bigger problem. Like, the problem for Sexton is a reoccurrence. He's like, to get a clear run for Sexton has been his problem. He may be fit tomorrow. He may train the rest of the week, but then you're worried 10 minutes in, 20 minutes into the game. His hammer tightens up or his calf tightens up. It's his problem is getting a clear run away from being injured.
And it's really concerning because it's gone from shoulder in the summer. Granted, that was a massive hit in the Pro 12 final and surgery and all that. Then it went to one left hamstring, then right hamstring, now bruised calf. So maybe there is a relation to all these, but it's the fact of the matter is he gets targeted and teams know that they can effectively target him. Like even in the Montpellier game at home, before the big hit, the big late hit that led to Sting getting sent off, there was three lads left shoulders in on him, you know? So like, and he's, I think he is even minding himself. He's not putting in the
tackles. Well, he's got smarter about keeping himself safe. I mean, he was almost reckless.
Tom Brady or something like this.
He was almost reckless in his own part. A few, you know, earlier in his career, he was plowing into guys when he didn't need to and probably risking injury. He's a bit smarter about that, which we're glad for that. But I think his problem is getting a clear run of maybe 2 months without getting injured.
Which I think he got at the end of last season. He seemed to get durable throughout the Six Nations. And in the run-in after, Leinster's end of season, he was pretty good. There was, like, if you look at his minutes, it's pretty high. It was decent stuff. And then, but it's the thing that, again, Ireland can be really successful this year if Paddy Jackson becomes the 10, but they can't be, I don't think they can win the championship. I just don't think we're at that level. Because Johnny, when he is playing, has been superb. Like, his range of passing seems to have improved, seems to have gone to another level even, you know.
I think there's a leadership thing as well that he brings when he's in that position. You've got two very strong halfbacks who are barking at the other 13 guys around him who are listening. Takes pressure off Rory Best. That sort of distribution of kind of leadership is very important. Where it's very hard for Jackson to come in with the best will in the world and boss guys around like Sexton would. You know, and that's actually important in games when things are maybe going a little bit awry.
Is it in Jackson's nature to boss a game if he was given the freedom by the coach?
Yeah, he looks. He's definitely come on as a player this season. Even when Pienaar's not there, there was like young Dave Shanahan was there.
It's one thing bossing guys in Ravenhill. It's a different thing bossing guys at test level.
Yeah.
And the thing as well is there's more pressure on you. So you don't have that space to be looking after other people as much as you would if you were playing a provincial level. So it's a higher demand on him. He'll grow into it. It takes time. Like everybody, Raj took time to bed into being the bossing guys around the field as well.
Yeah.
There's a maturing process in it. And Jackson probably at the moment is definitely not where Sexton is on that. Sexton, everyone knows he's calling the shots out there. I think Paddy would be a little more reticent, as you'd expect.
You see, George Ford would even be a bit ahead of him. They're about the same age, I think. I think even George Ford might be a year younger, but he's had these two key seasons where he's been backed repeatedly by his coach, so you know, and he's played test level at the highest level. Like, so
it'd be nice to be in a position where we could be resting players for the game against
Italy. I don't think it's
resting.
I think it's just proof is that Sexton hasn't played five games in a row, and if we want to get him, I don't know what Eddie thinks, but if Sexton's not on the pitch, running onto the pitch on March 18th, and the Grand Slam's on, are you leaning towards the English? Or are you leaning towards the Irish? You know.
I think, and it depends on if Jackson is in a good space.
Yeah.
If he's got a couple of games under his belt and he's
put
played
France
well,
away or something. Yeah.
I think, but I suppose what you'd be hoping is that, as it's a reasonable suggestion that you might rest Sexton before the French match, you know, give him a little bit of a break and let Jackson take the lead in there. No, you could get across the line in Rome and then come back, tee it up for the French game.
He won't want, and he won't be happy with it. And it'll, because the argument the other way around is we need to see him getting games. So
I can't imagine it happens too often in the Six Nations for any country that you rest your first choice out half.
No, you go.
You tend not to, because you go flat out for every game. But in fairness, given his injury profile, you have to take cognizance of the fact
can't
that
ignore it.
You just, need him. You need him. The two big games for us, and you know, you don't want to be writing off other teams, but the two big games are the last two games. And the upside of that is we should be in a, if we have a good vein of form, the confidence is high, all the patterns are bedded in, guys are playing, begin more like a club side, but then you've the risk of maybe Sexton isn't there because he's picked up an injury. That's the big
And the same thing goes with Sean O'Brien. It's not as big a problem. Like there's a great argument over Van der Flyer or Peter O'Mahony for the Irish bench on the premise that Sean O'Brien's going to be this. And I think from the All Black game in November, I think we can't look past Sean O'Brien again. But again, same thing.
It's not as catastrophic. I mean, with all due respect to Sean.
But over the ball, Eddie, though, in comparison.
He's a phenomenal player, but we've lots of options around that spot. Like, I mean, you could argue, and I might have a target on my back for saying this, is that, you know, Peter O'Mahony might be a guy they might need to start against Scotland for lineup presence. Mm. Like, you can go to Stander, you can go to Jamie Heaslip in a pinch, but they're not classic lineup jumpers, which if you've only two major jumpers like Toner and Dunica Ryan, it puts extra pressure on the line-out, extra pressure on Rory Best. Whereas if you've O'Mahony defensively and offensively is a really good line-out jumper, and you might say, well, maybe we need another a third presence in the line at that level.
You're dropping Heaslip or CJ there now, or is it somebody, a non-open size playing seven? Or?
Well, I think what he might do, and I'm just surmising here, yeah. I mean, I think O'Brien was there, but if he was trading about bringing another line-out presence, he might leave O'Brien on the bench and bring him in as an impact player, because Standard is playing out of his skin as well at the moment, and Heaslip is a standard bearer at number eight. So they're all possibilities. I'm not saying he should do it. They're all possibilities for him if he wants a line-out presence, you know, that we might need against Scotland.
Yeah, and I guess from covering Ireland camps, there's always a question mark about the information we're receiving about players' injuries and just how fit they're going to be.
Everyone's fit
for this
except
weekend.
For Andrew Conway. That's what we were told today. Yeah.
Were you down at Carton House today? This was the
I read the groundbreaking news that Andrew Conway's, this guy is so unlucky. Every time he hits form, he gets into an Ireland camp and he tweaks a groin or a hamstring. Like, he actually should be at the same level as Zeebo, even. They're the same year. They come through. Like, obviously, yeah. Zeebo's streets ahead of him and probably nailed on for the 11 jersey. But he's the only one that they've cleanly ruled out. Sean O'Brien, Johnny Sexton back on the training pitch tomorrow. Supposedly Paddy Jackson was running the line and running the moves last week in training, so that's all we have. I don't see any reason not to believe that. Sean O'Brien and Johnny Sexton were both saying there were soft tissue bruising injuries they're on the way back. It's whether they can get back enough. Like, we've seen from November that, like, Joe Schmidt did not bring Sean O'Brien to Chicago because of that, pretty much that reason, that he wasn't right where he wanted him, knowing that Josh Van der Flyer and Peter Mahoney are, you know.
Yeah, Rob Kearney was talking at today's press conference about the competition now at full back, and he said, I've been feeling like that for a long, long time, right back to Jordan Murphy, Gorvin Dempsey, Felix Jones went through a stage there. Now you've got Zeebs, you've got Tiernan O'Halloran. There was a huge amount of chat about Jarrod Payne last year, so it's not something new. I'm fully aware of the level of competition that is there. Is Rob Kearney's place at risk over this Six Nations?
I think when Jarrod Payne got injured, it wasn't. I think he's got so much credit in the bank from his performance against New Zealand in Chicago. That Soldier Field performance when, again, for the second or third time in his career, because of injuries and loss of form, people were writing him off. And Joe Schmidt had said it to him. He gave a really quality interview after the game with the print journalists. And Joe had said to me, he goes, this is your one.
He put it up to him.
You need to give it to him. And he goes, actually, probably wasn't the best thing. He thought at the time when it was said to him, he goes, I didn't think the best thing.
But I think someone of Rob's experience can take that. You wouldn't do that to every player, but if his knowledge and experience is around long enough, and he knew it himself, it's just an acknowledgement that Joe said to him. There's nothing wrong with that. And I think, to be fair, he delivered.
Yeah, he did.
So that stands him in great stead. I think that nudges it.
I think he keeps the 15 jersey for
sure, yeah.
Now, again, he's had a few problems, and it's probably done him no harm that Easton Asi he's been coming off the bench because he was coming back from injury and couldn't get back up to the level to get the 15 jersey back for Leinster. And very hard to argue with Easton Asi, but this happened to him in 2009 as well, and he ended up becoming the Lions fullback after being stuck on the Leinster bench for a few weeks.
So a possibility.
There's no better man than if he's pissed off, you're going to get a good performance.
But his experience and his ability to deliver on a big occasion, you know, you have to say he's in.
That's Zeebo left wing, Trimble right.
So are there any major talking points team-wise?
I think
outside the back row,
there is what Eddie said there about the line-out stuff, which would be Joe occasionally throws a little surprise. That could be it. The only thing was Dunica Ryan probably holds on to second row. So then if Delane's fit, it's Delane and Henderson.
I think he goes
bench
Henderson there because, again, it's the line-out option, and he can play, he's a tweener, he can play second or back row. You know?
Henderson for maybe even get into the team, possibly. I don't know if he's a tight end.
At whose expense, you see, that's the question
to
ask.
Yeah, Ryan has to go, so.
You know, yeah. So yeah. I just don't think, I think it's going to be a fairly straight-up selection, you know.
I think Marmion holds on to the scrum half jersey, sub-scrum half jersey. Keith Earls, probably number 23. I don't see anyone else. Like, Tommy Bowes hasn't done enough, I don't think, to come back in.
I think Tommy Bowes starts, or he's either starting or he's not in the 23.
I Trimble has done enough.
Trimble
for Ireland in November.
Yeah. So Earl's versatility gets him on the bench every time.
Earl's form, he's been really good. And he can come in and do cover a little bit. The way they shape it, he can come in. I think that's it. I don't think anyone else. So it's straightforward enough. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I'd say Rob Kearney was put up for media today as well. Zeebo's form is very hard to disguise, but just put him back on the left wing where he's probably better or as good at fullback.
Yeah, so when we're watching this game on Saturday in the opening 20-25 minutes, what are the key pointers we're looking at from this Irish performance to show that the form of November has continued into the Six Nations?
I'm kind of almost looking back to last year because I was watching that game live in the stadium, and Ireland went through patches where they were off the pace and they brought Scotland back into the game. But... Yeah. he just felt every time they got into the Scottish 22 they were going to score. Like, Scotland couldn't stop them because just had power game. And I think they'll just focus on that away from home, first game of the championship, nothing too fancy, hard yards, hard graft, and just wear Scotland down. So I would think a lot of probably one-off carries, getting really physical, laying down a marker. And even though Scotland will rise to that over the 80 minutes, they will probably win that aspect of the game. I think defensively, not giving Scotland any soft, you know, re-entries to the game. So it's away from home, the first game. You're always a wee bit nervous that despite all the training, everything isn't lockstep. It's that one performance where you're not sure where you are until you get out there. So there'll be a little bit of concern about that. But the way to offset that is not to try anything too spectacular. Just keep it fairly simple and just get on with it. Like in terms of and Ireland are so good at holding on to the ball. That again, they're over 95% most of the time with the ball in hand. And I think Murray has a big game again, and he's kicking us on the money. I just think that's what they'll go to do. Just impose themselves on Scotland.
Scotland, it always, that's what it said. It's open and running, and there's tries in this game in the last couple of seasons as well. So Ireland has to be careful in that sense. But because of the point scoring system, let's say Ireland are two scores ahead with 10-15 minutes to go. I think the dynamic of the game, of a Six Nations game,
absolutely,
changes.
Yeah.
And
which
Ireland have to keep the foot on the pedal then, you know. And it's not about just closing it out. It's about putting up, even getting three tries, or even chasing a bonus.
I still think it's a pity they didn't go with the French bonus point model of winning by more than three tries or more.
Mm.
Because we will see a team maybe pushing on for the fourth try and then shutting down. Because you have the bonus point in the back, like you see in Europe.
Yeah.
Whereas in France, you've got to keep playing, because if a team nicks a try at the end, they can take the bonus point off you. And it's a pity they didn't go with that model. Yeah. But anyway, we'll see.
There was a piece in the Sunday Times yesterday saying that the stats show that once bonus points were brought into the Heineken Cup and the Champions Cup, that actually the number of tries scored reduced.
Right. The only other thing about it is it's kind of unfair, because we are in the three games on the road.
Mm.
Granted, one of them's in Rome, but you've more chance of putting four tries on Italy in Dublin than you do in Rome. There's a massive advantage for wherever Italy goes for those teams in the Six Nations. So it's uneven. Like this is going to have to get looked at again after the tournament.
In all those previews in the weekend papers, I think I saw Wales everywhere from second to fifth. We've texted in about Wales being sleepers, and don't be surprised if they turn over England next week from Martin and Firhouse.
They're a good Six Nations team, Wales. I mean, I've seen Wales go into the autumn and just play howlers in the autumn and really off the pace. And the last time Warren Gatland was away with the Lions, Rob Howley had an awful autumn. They were, you know, baying for his head, and they went out and won the Six Nations.
Yeah.
You know, they're a good Six Nations team. They always come into form in the Six Nations. And in Cardiff, they're really, really difficult to beat. No matter what their form is going to, if you play them in Cardiff, it's always a dogfight. And I think that's the pivotal game for Ireland, in my view. But I think Wales are in the shake. If they start it well and they get the bit between their teeth, they're right in there. They could beat anybody. England's problem at the moment is they have the injury scenario that could undo them over the championship. They're missing a few big players. If they ship any more injuries, it'll show some vulnerability. It has to. They're not. They haven't that depth that they kind of profess to have. I think they're a little bit vulnerable. But they're still a good team. They've still got the bit between their teeth. And Eddie Jones knows what he wants, and they are happy to do whatever he wants.
Like Nathan Hughes goes at number 8 now because the Vunipola's gone. I imagine that's their next ball carrying tank, is it?
Or I mean they're missing a few guys.
Marler's going to come straight back.
Marler's going to come straight back in. They're still missing a few guys who can break the line physically.
Yeah.
And like for that reason, they're probably not as potent as they would have been last year. But having said that, I still think again they're going to be very hard to beat. But they may have that vulnerability and injuries that maybe at the end of the tournament could catch up with them.
Who's going to win the Six Nations, Gav?
Yeah, I always put it in print that Ireland are going to win it on the premise that Conor Murray, Johnny Sexton stay on the pitch.
Will you ever shut up going on about Murray and Sexton as if the rugby world will collapse without them? Josh van der Fleer, Carberry, Ringrose came from nowhere to be stars.
Yeah,
not my words.
Yeah.
That's a
These
tweet.
Lads are, like, again, I think Ringrose, if Ireland are going in the right direction, Ringrose will be the star of the competition. I'd be really interested to see how van der Fleer goes if he... because there's a good chance he could become just the nailed on 7 throughout the tournament if Sean O'Brien doesn't get through a couple of games.
Mm.
But no, Ireland, on the premise that if we get the team we need on the pitch against the team that even England's best team on March 18th, I think we can beat them. I think we're a good enough team to beat them in Dublin on that day.
Eddie?
I think it'll be points difference. I think both maybe Ireland, England and Wales will lose a game each, but it'll be points difference. I think Ireland would nick it on points difference, you know, but So much for speculation.
I'm going full behind the Grand Slam.
You're going all in Grand Slam. Why yeah, not?
Because it's easy to do now.
Same as Neil Francis on the front of the Sunday Indo yesterday, I think. Grand Slam for Ireland, which we'd all very much take. Great stuff. You'll be back next Monday night. Eddie O'Sullivan, Gavin Comiskey reflecting on Ireland against Scotland in the Six Nations. Thanks for joining us.
Off the Ball.
Find us on Twitter at Off the Ball.
News Talk 106 to 108.